succession number 12934, Reel 3.
Dr. Kisserly, Reel 3. You said you parked in Lerida.
We parked on the main street of Lerida. As far as I remember, it was afternoon. We parked for refreshments. And suddenly there was an air raid. I don't know if Lerida has been raided before or after, but there was a heavy raid. And the nearest bomb to us on the same street fell on the top of an elementary school. There were a number of children killed, and we saw women, badly mutilated bodies in their hands, screaming, "No hay Dios, there is no God, no Dios," running on the street. And that was like hell. And we could do nothing.
About how many casualties did
there seem to be? No idea. The school was full in session, and they had a full hit. I mean, if one looked into it, one could pinpoint it, because they were the records when they were raided. And that was the day we happened to be there.
What time of year was it?
Well, it was going from Teruel to Aragon front, so after we were traveling from Teruel to the Huesca front to Aragon, I don't remember exactly the date.
Maybe in the spring? March, maybe?
Well, it would not be in the winter, because we were parking happily in the olive grove. So it would be in the spring, after the bitter winter in Teruel.
Do you think that there is any excuse for bombing a school?
None whatsoever. Oh, the school, I don't know idea. No idea. Whether it was a center of communications, I don't know why they raided it.
So you were on your way to the Aragon front?
We went to the Aragon front, opposite Huesca. I know we bypassed a place called Barbastro, which we did not enter, but we bypassed it and went to the front. And we parked in various, not parked, but we set up minor hospitals in various villages as we went.
What type of things were you treating?
Well, we had no patients there. We were not involved in fighting. We were probably either reserve or something like that. In fact, I occasionally treated Spanish civilians, for instance, going back to when we were Torrelodones, when the Brunete fight stopped. I removed cataracts for several local peasants. You see? And in fact, I gave up eye work by the time I came to England. I lost one eye myself, not in the war, but my eyesight became very poor. So I could not do fine work anyhow.
You were telling me earlier off the record about how you were asked to specialize in eye work in Spain, but I don't think we put it on the tape.
That I specialized?
In eye work.
Well, simply because when I was traveling from the fortress of Figueras, when they were checking our documents, they asked me my experiences, and I said that in Hungary I was working at an eye hospital as a house surgeon, hoping to specialize, which originally was only 1 year work to be eye specialist. But while I was there, the law came that it would be 3 years, and I couldn't be bothered. I got bored with the idea, and I gave it up. So I had some eye experience, but not enough to call myself a specialist. I only accepted eye work, they are desperately short, until they find a fully qualified person, which they never found while I was with them. But we organized quick transport to the nearest eye hospital eventually after the Battle of Brunete. So any serious eye casualties, we evacuated posted to the nearest eye hospital. It could have been Madrid, even.
Now, in the spring, you went to the Belchite front.
Belchite front, yes.
Can you take up the story from there, please?
Well, it was actually on the Belchite front where we had these Spanish soldiers, the peasant boys, who were committing a lot of self-inflicted wounds, who were collected in the morning separately for all the other casualties, taken away in the small hours of the morning by a doctor.
You say that you didn't really know this Dr. Bulcar.
Oh, I knew him. But I did not know much about him. You know, I'm photographed with him here in the picture. But whether he was part of British medical aid, I don't know. I never seen him doing any actual medical work, practical work, but he was always carrying a big German machine pistol in a wooden holster. And, you know, it's always looking very elegant and all that. And also he was very pally with the Russians or the General Walter, because he was a Polish Jew, Walter, and so was Bulcan, I believe, because he spoke Russian. And where we could learn Russian in London other than if he had a background of that type of thing.
So if he wasn't doing medical work...
I don't know what he was doing. If you ask eventually Mrs. Sinclair Lutit, she would not remember what he was doing, because he could always see walking about in smart sort of uniform.
Was he an administrator?
No. He often disappeared, and we believe he went to the headquarters where the Russian were and the generals and all that.
How did the Spanish recruits react who had shot themselves in the foot?
They were paralyzed mentally, you know, they were just looking like ghosts. And they did not know what will happen to them. They just been taken out of the front line, brought to me, and there it was. I dressed their wounds, and I did not ask them what will happen. I did not tell them. I didn't know, no idea. I was surprised when they were collected in the morning. Exclusively the self-inflicted ones.
Did you see Bulcar again?
I can't remember I did. I don't think so. I saw quite a bit of them before, and his wife, if they were married. She was a very nice English person.
Any other memories from Belchite?
Well, I can't say. I spent quite a few... I did quite a few visits on the Belchite front, not fighting, but visiting troops who were camping there ready to fight, mainly Canadians, whom the only time I ever had dealings with in connection with supplying, so they wanted to go back to collect new glasses and all that. So, you know, my hat as an optician quality, I went there and dealt with their eye trouble, not in the fighting at that time.
What rank did you have in...
By this time I was captain, but previously until late, mid-1937, I was a teniente, which is equivalent to lieutenant. Afterwards I became a captain. And when I noticed in my carnet militaire, which is my military document, that I was mentioned as a captain in October, and I was already leaving Spain, so I don't know why I was not mentioned before.
How long were you at Belchite for?
Well, on the Belchite front, several weeks, I should think. Of course, mind you, I had a leave at the beginning, I think, of the the summer. I had a working holiday instead of a holiday in a base, proper base hospital in the town of Mataró, where I arrived with an ambulance full of wounded people, and I had a very interesting, medically interesting experience, because they were billeted at the bottom of the hospital, more or less in the cellar of a very big hospital, the 30 soldiers and divided them into two groups. Half of them, they just wanted to lounge and play card, that sort of thing, in the hospital. The other half were willing to come with me to the beach every day by ambulance. And those who came to the beach, I exposed them to all the sunshine and the seawater. I made them go to the sea with open wounds, bandages sticking in and out of their wounds. At the end of the fortnight while I was there, they looked athletic almost and sunburnt and looking quite different. All the people that were in the cellar looked like worms under a stone. You know, I mean, they chose to not to come to the beach. And that ever since then, when I have very reluctant ulcerated cases, ulcerated wounds, very reluctant to heal, expose them to this day to ultraviolet rays here, even on the Isle of Wight. Not very much recommended by the medical authorities, but I find it from a practical point of view a wonderful thing.
Any other experiences you had at Mataró?
Well, not at Mataró, because there we were, of course, mixed with American medical services, Dr. Barsky and his lot. But they were just in a sort of friendly companions, but no very interesting episode there. Except when I was, of course, interrogated by the same people who somebody reported me as a suspicious character, and they came out, two of them, from Albacete or somewhere, and they interrogated me, made me draw map of Spain, part of the interrogation. I never heard from them to this day. So obviously must have gone satisfied. And of course my arrest in Barcelona was quite an experience.
Can we just deal with the interrogation by the SIM?
Yes.
This is the military interrogation.
Military interrogation.
Why did they ask you, can you tell me about them asking you to draw a map of Spain?
No idea. They asked me various questions. I am sure that some enemy of mine reported me as a suspicious character, and I know who it was, in fact. And they asked me a lot of questions, and eventually asked me to draw a map of Spain. And it must have looked very primitive, I should imagine, because when they looked at it, they left me, and that's the last I heard from them.
How many of them were there?
Two. Two Argentinians they were, not Spanish. Argentine communists, I should think.
How did you know they were Argentinian?
They said so. Yeah, they said so. Because they, you know, they were not Argentine origin. They came from Argentina. They might have been Polish or anything you like. They did not look Spaniards, but they came from Argentina. There were quite a number of them in Albacete, you know, people like that. This is not right.
You were telling me that you did actually meet another Hungarian.
In Mataró, yes. In Mataró. Oh, initially in Madrid. I met a Hungarian by the name of Dr. Harasti. He introduced himself. He was a captain in the Spanish army, not in the international brigades, as he lived in Spain for some years and was a Spanish citizen. And took me to his flat, introduced me to his wife. They both were very nice to me. They offered me the use of that car for the day, which I accepted on my own, drove it around Madrid. And I don't remember if I saw them more than once in Madrid, but eventually when I was in Mataró several months later, he appeared in the grounds of the hospital and was talking to me. At least I greeted him in a friendly way and he said, I don't wish to speak to you because you are a suspicious character. I was so astonished that I thought he was joking. But by that time he added the incredible remark, and remember that my wife got syphilis. I thought he must be mental. I never met him since. Also, I understand he returned to Hungary from somebody mentioned the name while he was in Hungary once, but I never met him.
Do you think there could have been any connection between him and the investigation?
Yes, I am absolutely sure. Whether they had, at the time, there was great suspicion going between Stalinist communists and Trotskyites. Well, I knew very little about either Stalin or Trotsky, and I certainly never got mixed up with it. But I had a feeling that this chap was very nervous about himself being suspected of being a Trotskyist. I don't know why, but that was my impression.
Was he a Trotskyist?
No, I don't know, but for some reason, I don't remember why, but I suspected he might be. And probably he wanted to be in good shape with that sim, and they reported me as a suspicious character.
Had you seen the SIM before?
No, never saw them, never heard, did not know they existed. Only after I found out all about the dirty work they did after I came to England and read about it. I mean, for instance, Andre Marty, who I met several times, not to talk to him, but I met him several times and he visited us. And he admitted the executions he ordered among the international brigadiers in Albacete. I got the report of it here, that he reported to the French Communist Party, from which he was expelled. He admitted, not more than 400. Not more than, that was, I got the report here. And that was my suspicion. And of course, the only trouble, I was in the law. Certainly, once I went to the Spanish-French frontier at Port Bou, and I don't remember why, that I left a gold watch. I had an American Walton gold pocket watch, which I, very expensive, I believe it was, I left it in somebody's keeping in Port Bou. And I got the permission from Len Crome, who was my boss, who now is in London, had a permission, written permission, to go to the frontier and collected it, the watch. Well, Crome trusted me to go. I went and came back. But afterwards, I have a feeling that somebody asked me a question, why did you go to the frontier? I said, well, I went to collect this watch, and here it is, and this was a permit, you know. But of course, I don't know if I mentioned my arrest in Barcelona.
No, we haven't mentioned that. Can we have a detailed account of that now, please?
Yes, certainly. While I was on the Aragon front with my Hungarian pharmacist from Bratislava, we went to Barcelona to buy urgent medical stores and some instruments. We went for the day, and while we were in Barcelona, we heard that there is a street market where you can buy black market American cigarettes. So I suggested we go to the black market. We went, and we bought the cigarettes. And meantime, the police started raiding the market, and a fist fight type of fight broke out between the police and the stallholders. And I said to my friend, just wait a minute, and whipped out my camera and took a picture of this fight. I hardly had time to put the camera away when I was lifted up by two characters, thrown into a car, and driven to a police station on the Paseo de Flores,
which Rambla de Flores,
to a police station, And I was still in a pretty smart captain's uniform. They put me on a bench, and every time I got up to protest, they just screamed at me, "Kayate," which means, of course, shut up. And they kept on knocking about various criminal customers, I suppose, or drugs in my presence. But every time I went to the toilet, two chaps came with me, holding next to me, just holding my arms. And eventually, middle of the night, during which time nobody asked me a question, name, address, or what I took, photograph, not a word, except to shut up. And these two detectives arrived, civilian policemen, on a big open Hispano Suiza car. They took the camera, they had a lot of whispering, pointing at me. They grabbed me, took me out to this open car in the middle of the back seat, and they were sitting each side of me, a uniformed policeman ahead of me and a uniformed driver. They drove me down to the Rambla, down towards the Christopher Colon Monument, Cristobal Colon, as we call him, monument in the harbor. Not far away was a ship, absolutely known as a place of horror and as executions at a time when lives were just like being squashed like flies. So I was sure they are taking me there. And I remember the childish pleasure, smoking, allowed me to smoke a black market Lucky Strike cigarettes, and they kept on blowing the smoke sideways to their faces, expecting they hit me any moment. I know it was childish looking back to them, but they never said a word, never touched me. But when we got to the harbor, we turned up a street that led to the headquarters of the police. So I knew they were not taking me to the boat. At the headquarters of the police, they took me to the top floor in a lift. With my camera, handed it over to some people who provided two guards. They took me down to the basement below ground level. Below ground level. I went through a dark corridor. They opened a steel door. They gave me a kick, and I was inside a crowded police cell. I started shouting, kicking the door. They opened it, and I started saying, "Look, I'm a captain," etc., etc. This hit me in the chest and fell back again. This was, I think, due to the bad feeling and definite enmity between the Madrid authorities and the Catalan authorities by this time, anarchists in Catalan, communists in Madrid. And I had in my pocket a document issued, which I personally collected in the war office in Madrid. They allowed me to take photographs anywhere in Spain. But they never asked me about it, never searched me personally. They kept me in this hole 2 or 3 days, and I couldn't even eat at all. It was horrible. People asked me to keep quiet, because they can't rest. And they said, "Oh, you may be taken out like somebody's in the morning. I never see them again." But if you stood on somebody's shoulder, you could look across the yard of this place. And about the third or fourth day, I saw the opposite side of the square walking the above-mentioned Hungarian pharmacist who was with me when I was arrested, my medical superior from the unit, and the Russian officer in uniform. And not many minutes after, a guard came and shouted, "Dr. Juan Kisely." They took me upstairs, and there were standing beside the big desk, large desk, the three people who came for me, and whom I took it to be the head of the Barcelona police behind the desk. He got up, and he said, "I have to apologize for the mistake, but you have been very unwise to take photographs in a delicate situation, and here is your camera," but of course no film in it. And he offered to shake hands, which I appeared not in notice and declined, and that was the end of it. They let us out. So that was the end of that nasty episode.
Were you able to discuss with the inmates of the cell what their own experiences had been?
Well, when I made a lot of noise after I was locked in first, before I was kicked in the second time, I shouted at them, look, I've been arrested mid-afternoon, nobody asked me any question yet. And there was sarcastic laughter, people say, oh, I've been arrested, God knows how long, nobody asked me any questions, I'm pleased about it, because while you keep quiet, you notice that some people are taken out in the morning, maybe crying, you never see them again. And so I just shut up and just waited what would happen.
Can you tell me anything more about what these people were like in the cell?
Well, they talked among themselves. I don't know if they trusted me or anything. We did not speak much to each other. We looked glum altogether, and there we were sitting or lying down or something.
Were they Spanish or not?
Mostly. I was the only foreigner in that room. There were about 15 people or so, maybe 20.
Were any of them taken out for interrogation?
Yes. In the morning, somebody was called up. I think most of them returned. I don't remember if one or two did not come back, but they were out, and they did not appear to be physically beaten at the time while I was there anyhow.
Why could you not eat?
It was horrible. Even the coffee looked at the coffee, I drank a little bit. It was horrible, and I was very upset and did not feel like eating. I was really worried there, you see, because I said nobody seemed to come for me or what happened, you know. And the hostility on the part of the police, you could cut it with a knife. And they were against the International Brigade as a whole. That's well known.
Now, we seem to have missed out your period at the Huesca front in April and May. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me anything about that?
Well, nothing very much, except, you see, when there was fighting, we had some wounded, not very many, and we were mostly, or as a hospital, I don't mean the units were in reserve. We did very little medical work there. I was still with the British unit.
How was it that you came to leave Spain eventually?
Well, because originally I went to Spain to be there half a year or a year. And also I was promised that every 6 months I would get a holiday in Spain. And after a year I would get a holiday abroad to France, where people went, like the Sinclair Lutyens went to France. And I applied for a holiday in France or to be released from the army. And while I was there, the war collapsed anyhow, and I did not mean to come back by this time. Spain was cut in half. There was not the hope of a victory. And that, I don't remember to this day, I think I mentioned it already to you anyhow, that I don't remember to save my life how I got from Spain to Paris. The next thing I remember clearly, I was fingerprinted and photographed by the Sûreté, which was the condition to allow me to remain for the time being in Spain, in the hand of the International Brigade authorities, who provided a hotel for me
in
Paris, in Rue Chauffournier, near the Père Lachaise Cemetery. And I was there until